So hello and welcome to Back to Work Connect, the podcast. I'm Gina Oglesby, CEO of Back to Work Connect, an education and employment career hub designed to get returners and career changers back to work. In each episode, we will discuss topics that are important to you, including financial well-being, mental health, and the supports available to help you get back to work. In this episode, we are joined by Neve Burka, founder and CEO of Sprout Plans, to discuss understanding your taxes. So let's start at the beginning, Neve. What are the different types of taxes that we should be aware of?
Hi, Gina. So there's a number of different types of taxes. I mean, there's income tax, there's capital acquisitions tax, there's capital gains tax, there's VAT, there's stamp duty, there's corporation tax. But the three that we're really most interested in as individuals are income tax, which we'll focus on today, capital acquisitions tax, which is in relation to gifts and inheritances, and capital gains tax. So they would be, you know, the key areas that we should all have a basic understanding of.
So tell us at a high level how someone's tax is calculated.
Essentially, income tax is payable on any income. So this could be maybe unearned income, such as rental income or dividends from shares. Or it might be earned income. You know, I take up a job and I earn 40,000 a year. And essentially, the revenue looks at your total income. And first of all, it applies tax. So it applies tax at 20% up to your 20% tax band. And there are a few different tax bands that people need to be aware of. And then over and above that, it's at 40%. Then they give you back tax credits. So depending on how much tax you've paid, you then get back tax credits based on your own personal situation. Then they apply USC, which is on the top level, your gross income. Before pension deductions, before any taxable deductions, you pay USC on that amount. And your PRSI, again, you pay it on that amount. And your PRSI is key for your social welfare benefits and things. So if we look at your tax band, everybody who's Irish tax resident has a tax band. And if you're a single individual, you can earn up to €36,800 in 2022. And only pay tax at 20%. Anything above that is at 40%. And that's increasing to 40,000 come 2023. So it means a lot of earners will only pay tax at 20%. If you are a single or widowed parent of a dependent child, your 20% tax band is actually increased by €4,000 a year. So instead of being 36,800, it's 40,800. And if you think of that increase in tax band, in your pocket, if you're earning over 40,800, that's worth €800 a year to you. If you're married or in a civil partnership, you can also choose to exchange some of your tax band between spouses. So say you have one partner who earns 60,000 and you have one partner who earns 25,000. It might make sense for you on a cash flow basis. The 25,000 person can give some of their tax band to the higher earning spouse with the view to getting more money on a monthly basis. Now, if you choose to be taxed together, you can still at the end of the year get back any unclaimed taxes. But it just to know that if one person is paying less than the other, you can avail of the two 36,800 tax bands. So, and as I say, from 2023, this is increasing to €40,000, which would be €80,000 between a married couple or someone in a solo partnership. So they tax you, they work out how much tax you're due, and then they give you back tax credits. So tax credits will be a single person tax credit. Everybody who's earning money is entitled to a single person tax credit. And that's €1,700 in 2022. Then if you are an employee, you're entitled to an employee tax credit. Now, you can transfer your single person tax credit between spouses, but you can't transfer your PAYE between spouses because PAYE relates to your job as an employee. Then if you're self-employed, there is a similar credit, similar to the PAYE, that you get that tax credit back. So you have your gross income, you pay your tax, and you're given your tax credits back. And then they work out your USC and your PRSI. So that's essentially how you're taxed.
So if you had a couple and one wasn't working, it makes much more sense for them to have the partner who is working to have the two personal tax credits.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, on that, you know, there's a big list of tax credits. So you mentioned there And I'm making an assumption here, but say the person who's not working is might be caring for children in the home, they might be eligible. And I say might be eligible for home care credit as well. So there might be other tax credits there. So this is a big thing that I've seen actually lately. There's things like incapacitated tax credit. And say you might be at home looking after a child who might be, you know, maybe have a condition. They won't be able to care for themselves once they reach the age of 18. But say a child might have autism and they won't be able to care for themselves long term. There is an incapacitated child tax credit, which is, you know, a valuable tax credit. And it's worth just running through the list of tax credits to make sure that you are claiming all the tax credits that you can.
And is there anywhere that you can find out what tax credits you can claim for?
There would be two points of reference. First of all, I'd send you to the Revenue website, which lists all the tax credits. And then I would talk to the Citizens Information Office, who are just an invaluable source of knowledge. But even a quick Google might point you in direction of what you may or may not be eligible for.
So if you're a PAYE employee, do you need to do a tax return at the end of the year?
PAYE is pay as you earn. And your employer deducts tax at source under PAYE and pays it over to the revenue. And ideally, your employer looks after all of that for you. And you would have no further tax liability to you at the end of the year. If you have any kind of additional income, if you get 10 euros a month from shares in dividends, if you get deposit interest on your deposit accounts, now I know we haven't seen it in a while because deposit rates have been so low, but interest rates are rising, so you might see that again. You need to be making a tax return. But another thing is, nearly everybody has medical bills, or many people might be working from home, and there's tax reliefs there to claim. And I see it year in, year out, you say to people, do you file your medical expenses? And this is your prescriptions, your visits to the GP, you know, any consultants. You can get tax relief at 20% on all those, less what you've been given through your health insurer, if you have health insurance. But there's tax relief to be obtained by filing your tax return. So I would say, as a PAYE employee, I would never suggest that, no, you do not need to make a tax return. Technically, it should all be looked after, but I would say most of the time there's tax relief due back. And you can also go back up to 4 years. So if you were to file your tax return as a PAYE employee, you can go back to 21, 20, 19 and 18. There's 4 years there if you have your medical receipts and claim that tax back at 20%. And they're really quick. You know, it's a couple of weeks if you file all those returns. But keep your receipts in case the revenue audit you.
So talking about tax relievable expenses, we talked previously about pension contributions. Are all pension contributions tax relievable, and what are the tax consequences at retirement?
So pension, as I've said before, is one of the best tax reliefs that you will ever receive. So when you contribute to a pension, you can claim tax relief at your marginal rate. So this means at what rate you are paying tax, up to your age-related limit. So just quickly running through them. In your 20s, it's 15%. In your 30s, it's 20%. In your 40s, it's 25%. In your early 50s, so the first half of your 50s, it is 30%. Then the second half of your 50s, it's 35%. And if you're over 60, it's 40%. So up to 40% in your 60s, you can get tax relief. You don't get relief against USC and you don't get relief against PRSI. Your employer can contribute into a pension scheme and it's not subject to tax in your hands. So that's either into an employer-based pension scheme or into a PRSA. And the employer doesn't pay PRSI on that. So that's an 11% cash flow saving to the employer. It's treated as a trading expense in the hands of the employer. When you retire, depending on your employment status, you can take a multiple of salary as a tax-free lump sum up to certain amounts, or you can choose to take 25% as a lump sum. The first 200,000 of which is tax-free.
The next 300,000 is taxable at 20%.
And anything above, a lump sum above $500,000 is taxed at your marginal rate. So as an employee, you have great options. So say I worked for Back to Work Connect for 20 years and my salary was 100,000 and I choose to retire. At retirement, assuming my pension fund was big enough to support it, I could choose to take either 1.5 times because I have 20 years service. So it changes depending on your years of service of my salary as a lump sum, which would be 150,000. Or I could choose to take 25% of the fund as a lump sum. So say my fund was half a million, 25% of that is 125 grand. So in that situation, as an employee, I have options and I can take the bigger tax-free lump sum of 150,000 and then take the balance to provide for a pension in my retirement or an income in my retirement. Now that income is subject to income tax on the way out. So you have your lump sum, some of which is tax-free, some is taxed at 20%, and then the balance, which is taxed at my marginal rate. So say I had rental income of 2,000 euros a month and I have my pension income, we'll just round it up and say it's 1,000 euros a month. I'm already earning 3,000 a month. So, you know, I'm going to be paying potentially 40% on that. But in the intervening period, when I got my tax relief at source, it's been growing in a tax-free environment, invested hopefully very well, and there's been no tax on that. So yes, at the back end, I do end up paying income tax, but I get a certain amount tax-free.
So at the beginning of our conversation today, Niamh, we talked about the different types of tax. So capital gains tax is one. So when might this apply to our listeners and when do they have to be aware of it?
Yep. So capital gains tax applies on the disposal of any asset. So if most assets that are subject to capital gains tax, if I have shares in a company and I bought them in 2000 and I bought them for 1,000 euros and they are now worth 10,000 euros. There is an uplift there and I have to pay capital gains tax. But conversely, if I bought them for 10,000 and I'm selling them for 1,000, say it was a bank stock, I have a loss there. And it's very important that I record that loss because that loss can be claimed against future gains. So in the first instance, I bought for 1,000, 20 years on, I'm selling for 10,000. I have a 9,000 uplift there. And that's subject to tax, 33%. However, every year, every individual gets 1,270 euros, which came from 1,000 funds converted to euros. This is how old it is, that you can have of a gain that's not subject to 33% tax. So I have my 10,000. I'm going to take off my 1,000 that it cost me to buy these shares. And I'm going to take off my 1,270 euros. So I'm going to pay over 33% tax on the uplift, which will be 7,730 euros. So I paid 33% on that. We'll just round it and say that's about 2,000 euros. So say I dispose of it in December 2022. I have to pay that tax to revenue by the end of January 2023. But I don't need to file the details of it until my tax return the 31st of October next year. So this is where you'd also record if you had a loss. So if I had bought for 10,000 and I sold for one and I have that loss of 9,000, I want to record that in my tax return. Because say next year I make that same gain of 7,000 that's taxable, I can use my loss, carry it forward and get that gain tax-free essentially because I have the loss to offset against the gain. So that really at a high level would be capital gains tax. There's different calculations for different assets, depending on when you acquired them. Any costs associated with buying or selling the assets are deducted from any gain. But, you know, when we look to improve our net worth, we are looking potentially at assets that fall liable to capital gains tax.
So tell me a little bit about gifts and inheritance. What's the level of gifts before you have to pay tax on it? And the same for inheritance.
Yeah, well, it's the same tax. It's called capital acquisition tax, which covers both gifts and inheritance. So gifts relate to a lifetime gift. So if I was to gift you something now, and then inheritance would be if I died and you got it. But it's the same tax and a lot of the same rules will apply. Say we were sisters, Gina, and I was to die and I left you an apartment. You would be deemed to receive the full value. So we'll say it's 300,000 euros. I left your apartment valued at 300,000 euros and I didn't leave you anything else. When you receive that, you're deemed to have received from me. Now, in that situation, it's called Group B because we're sisters. So you have a 33,500 tax-free threshold. So you need to breach that before you pay capital acquisitions tax. And you only pay capital acquisitions tax between the the value of the asset, and your unused threshold. And then you need to pay that within 4 months. So depending on your relationship with the person who gifts or bequeaths you an asset, you pay capital acquisitions tax. So if I was your parent, the threshold is 335,000 euros and it's a lifetime limit. So say my partner was your other parent and I left you an apartment worth 300,000. And then my partner died, who is also your parent, and they left you 300,000 euros. You've already used up 300,000 euros of your Group A threshold with the inheritance that I left you. But you have 35,000 euros there to offset against this new inheritance. It can cause problems if you're given something like a property and no liquid cash to pay, to pay for the inheritance tax. So you might see sometimes people take a debt to pay for it, or sometimes people are forced to sell an asset. So that's inheritance tax. So Group A is 335,000, Group B is 33,500, and Group C is a stranger, is 16,250. One other thing is I can give anybody a gift once a year of up to 3,000 euros and it's not taxable. It's called a small gift exemption. So I could give you 3,000 euros this year, Gina, and I could give you 3,000 euros come January, and I've given you 6,000 euros and it doesn't eat into your threshold. This is a really useful tool when you're thinking about a grandparent, say, who wants to provide for their grandchild and wants to give them money for when they're 18. They could gift them 3,000 euros a year into like a fixed trust arrangement. And when they get to 18, they have a little less nest egg. So it can be used tax efficiently, but at a high level, that's capital acquisitions tax.
And does the same apply for parents? Can parents only give their children 3,000 a year tax-free?
So in the case of parents, you are allowed to provide for the support and care of your children. If you are paying for their food on their table and the maintenance of your children is deemed to not be a taxable gift. But if you were, you know, if you were very affluent and wanted to give your children 2,000 euros a month, you are running into the gift territory there, even though they're under the age of 18. You know, if you're just putting that into an account because you're giving them 24,000 euros a year and you're only, one person can only give 3,000 euros a year. So each year you're giving them 24,000, you're eating into their Group A threshold by 21,000 a year. So it depends on the benefit that they're receiving. Really interestingly, Gina, actually, technically engagement rings are taxable because they're strangers in blood, right?
Yeah.
Say you bought me a 50 grand engagement ring. At that time, we're not spouses. So when you're married, you can transfer between spouses without creating a capital acquisitions tax liability. But when you're not married, you're strangers in blood, even if you're a cohabiting couple who've been living together for 20 years. So the threshold between two strangers is 16,250. So technically, if you gave me a 50,000 euro engagement ring, I'm liable to capital acquisitions tax on an element of that.
That's actually quite scary, isn't it? Just as well, I don't have an engagement ring worth 50 grand.
Yeah.
Some really interesting topics there, Niamh. Again, you know, taxes is a fairly complex subject. Where can people get advice from, you know, about their taxes? And you said revenue and citizens advice, would that be right?
Well, revenue and citizens advice is certainly a great place to start when you want to know the basics of what your tax-free thresholds are, what tax credits you might be eligible for. But if you in any way, you know, need help with filing your tax returns or have any kind of, you know, more complicated situation, I would recommend that you talk to an accountant who will help you file your tax returns. Now, if it's a basic tax return, set yourself up on Ross, you know, file your own tax credits, medical receipts and get that tax credit back. It's a user-friendly system and well worth doing. But if it's complicated, talk to an accountant.
Thanks so much, Niamh. That was brilliant. Thank you for listening to Back to Work Connects, the podcast. I'm Gina Oglesby, and today we were with Niamh de Burca of Sprout Plans. We'd like to say thank you to our sponsors, Bank of Ireland, the Begin Together Fund, and the Community Foundation of Ireland.